Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's guest represents a truly rare story. A seventh, yes, you heard it right, a seventh generation leader in a family business that's been around for over 120 years. Kyle Tenney is the executive vice president of Mid York Press, a New York-based packaging manufacturer specializing in high-quality paperboard solutions for pharmaceutical and other regulated industries. Kyle began working in the business as a teenager and now plays a key role in shaping its future alongside his father, who continues to serve as CEO. He brings a grounded, hands-on leadership style and a clear passion for carrying the company forward through innovation, sustainability, and respect for its enduring legacy. Kyle, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Great to be here, Ed.
Awesome. Hey, let's start with the legacy piece. Mid York Press, been in your family for over 120 years. What's it like growing up around a business with that kind of history?
I'm going to make one correction before we go into that, which is the business is actually over 195 years old. 195. We were founded in 18. We had our origin in 1820, but we were incorporated around 1828. So we're about 197 years old.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Yep.
But I'm sorry, just repeat that question one more time.
Yeah. So what's it? So over almost 200 years then. What was it like growing up around a business with that kind of history? Were you aware of that as you were a young person? Did you have a kind of a conscious recognition that, wow, this is not only the family business, but it's been around for a real long time?
Oh, I didn't actually realize how old the business was until I started going through and seeing the evolution of the business from its origins as a newspaper and penny saver job shop located in Hamilton, New York, and its evolution into what is now the Mid York Press today in Sherbourne, New York. The company itself has undergone a tremendous transformation since its founding. And I think that's the key to surviving as a business that is this old, is that you don't get to be a very old company unless you're continuously reinventing yourself as a business.
That's a great point. I'm guessing that the company, from a location standpoint, geographically, it moved around a bit, right? Or was it always in the same general vicinity?
In general terms, yes. It historically was a newspaper that was anchored in what is now Hamilton, New York. For those who may not be familiar, Colgate University is located in that exact part of the country.
Yep.
It's also where Colonel Smith, who was one of George Washington's chief lieutenants, is buried along with his, I don't believe his wife, the daughter of John Adams, is buried there as well. I can't confirm that fact, but I know that her husband was buried there as well. Okay. Not to get too deep into the history here, but that's what makes it famous, is that's it's the university that's there and just the people who have come from that location. It's quite a historical town. But the business itself historically has been in basically the same 30 square mile area, the town of Hamilton, what is the town of Norwich, and now town of Sherbourne.
Got it. What were some of like your earliest memories of the business? Like, when did you first consciously recognize, hey, there's a business sort of involved in my family and it's Mid York Press? When did that come up on your radar?
It came up on my radar at a very early age. I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, the first time I ever came into the building. And the first time I came in, just to give you an idea of how much has changed in the business, people were wearing suits. People were dressed to the nines. It was a very formal place to be. And as a little kid, it was like, wow, I feel like a sore thumb in here. And now in 2025, unless you're going into a bank or you go into a very high class institution overall, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody wearing anything higher than maybe a sport coat and a polo. That's what a lot of people get in the business world these days.
Oh, I remember as a kid, when my dad would go into the office, it was always a three-piece suit, nothing less. And even when he and I overlapped, there was a blizzard, Kyle. And so I dressed down. I wore khakis and a sweater. And he looked at me when I came in and he said, "Something wrong with your outfit today?" So even then, it was a suit and tie was expected. And that was in the early 90s.
Absolutely. It gives you an idea how much our standards for what business attire have changed in the past 30 years. This is not even 30 years ago now. This had to be just before 2000 when this was occurring.
Yeah.
So it's really telling how much our world has changed since then with how business attire is structured these days.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So everything has changed. The business, the transformation, it's even how we function in business has certainly evolved in that span of history. So getting back to your span of history, you started in a production role and now you serve as executive vice president. What were like one or two key milestones or lessons from that journey that shaped you, the leader you are today?
The key thing was, I think a lot of people generally, when they are a legacy of the business, have to contend with the burden of being the son of the owner, and people have a tendency to look at you very differently. And that's just unavoidable. You're always going to have that burden over your shoulder. The best way to carry that for me to carry forward was I never wanted to be seen as a legacy. I always wanted to be seen as someone who's willing to go in and take care of the business, run the business. And when I got the opportunity to step up or take up opportunities others probably wouldn't take, I always tried to put my best foot forward to do things that other people probably wouldn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And it really made it easier to and more enduring to the people I was working with at the time that I was willing to do that. And it was, with all the challenges that just come with all that, at the end of the day, I ended up getting an opportunity to do things that a lot of other people probably wouldn't have had the chance to do. I've worked in every part of the business. I've started out doing the most menial job in packaging, which is hand stripping cartons. And that is a very labor-intensive business. It's a labor-intensive part of the process, I should say. I used to come home with cuts on my hands. I'd come home and my hands would be towards about the end of the summer would be so callous. Some people thought I was working and doing hay. What I was really doing was I was just taking paperboard and stripping out blanks for the gluers.
But I imagine that, and I'm talking with other guests on this show, it's not uncommon to come into the business and literally work from the ground up and learn all the roles. And
yep.
Not only does that give you a tremendous vantage point of the business, I think along the way, it probably garners a lot of respect for those in the business that are non-family members to say, Kyle's walked the hard mile. He's done the work we're doing. He knows exactly what we're doing because he's done it.
And I think that's the only way you really can get people to respect you at the end of the day. If you want to be a true leader, is you need to be able to lead by example and not mm-hmm. just from the throne. Yep. And it really isn't. Yeah, there's no real point to the throne. There has to be credibility behind mm-hmm. there to get people to respect whoever owns the business. Because if you can't understand the process, it's very difficult for you to contend with the day-to-day issues that will emerge in this enterprise. And again, this is an independent business. This is just, I'm just the seventh in a long line of people who have been able to take advantage of this wonderful enterprise. So it's incredibly important for me to understand how the business functions and how to best communicate the problems with people on the floor and people within the office as well as any customers. It's difficult to do that if you've never been a part of that role in any way, shape, or form. So I still think that's the best way forward for anybody who wants to take over their family business.
And I think that's said, and I think those sentiments are echoed by a number of guests, and it would seem that there's a pattern there where those that have come up through the ranks, learned all the roles from small to big, tend to be the most successful because they have that body of knowledge that they're carrying forward as opposed to just being inserted at the top or something like that. So I think certainly bodes well for you, bodes well for others that walk that way and walk that path. And to your point, it's not always pleasant work, right?
No, I should say that my happiest day was realizing that I wouldn't have to come in and pull cartons every day. We had a guy who got sick and I got the opportunity to jump up a little quicker than I might have. I was 17, I got the opportunity to go and learn how to mixing for our presses because we mix our ink in-house. And that one was way easier. Instead of, my problem went from being cuts on my hands to being dealing with just normal press chemistry, which is very drying. It's alcohol, isopropyl, and assorted washes that are used to just clean up press ink. It was a heck of a lot easier to do than to come home and have Band-Aids all over my hands, that's for sure.
I can imagine. So I have to ask this question. As a seventh generation leader, did you feel that you had a choice in joining the business? Or was it somewhat predetermined that's just what you were going to do?
So there was always a presumption that I would be the best candidate, but there was no pressure. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I ended up staying in the business, I left college, having already worked at the business, I had some concept of what I would be getting into. I needed some money to get started with my postgraduate career. And in order for me to get money going, I just went back to the plant, started working. And I started to realize, hey, this isn't a bad gig. I got some more opportunities as time went along. It was never my intention. I was planning on going to law school. I was planning on going and studying law, not just for trial stuff, but maybe to get into the business world that way. I was always going to try to get into business because business just interests me, but I was never looking to get into my business particularly. After about 6 months of being home from college and working in the business, getting the opportunity to actually work on a printing press at that point in time, a chance to be on a die cutter and a chance to be on a gluer, and to see just the incredible creative work that happens in a normal packaging facility, it became harder and harder for me to not like it and not eventually love it. And what eventually transpired was I said, you know what? I'm happy. I don't want to go out anymore and do this. I'm enjoying this. This is fun. I'm getting a lot out of this, and I'm getting paid for it to top it off. It was easy. I decided to stay, and I'm looking back on it now. There's so much that this business has done for me in terms of just expanding my knowledge of the world outside of packaging with all of our customers and all of our clients that I think it's given me not a second college education, because I did go to Syracuse University, which is a very good institution, but a very good, I wouldn't call it a street education either, a very good real world application of my knowledge.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. That's probably the best I can do at the moment.
So if I were to ask you the factor or factors that influenced your decision to say, I'm going to stay, was it a kind of a point of realization, Kyle, or was it more of a gradual, hey, I'm liking this, I feel good here, I have a passion for this, and I want to keep going? Or was there a moment in time when you look back and say, that was the tipping point? How did it go for you?
There were three things that really influenced me. First of all, is the pride that it is your family business. This is a very successful business, obviously, with its long-standing reputation and its long-standing existence. It had to be successful. And it was a matter of pride in that respect. It was a matter of just what we have going for us in this business compared to most other people in this industry. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I would say that really influenced it to me is just our work culture. When I went to work every day, it didn't matter who I was dealing with. Most of the people I dealt with on a day-to-day basis loved coming to work here. And it made it really hard. It still makes it very hard for me to look anywhere else, because I've been in places where outside of my family business, where the work culture is just put your head down and get it done, that you really are stuck in a culture that is making money. They're profitable companies. They're very good companies, but they're not companies that really have I don't want to be too cruel, but they don't really have a soul to them. They don't have a vision. They are just there is an opportunity to provide for somebody as opposed to a company where people can talk, know each other, people have a great chemistry with each other. Whenever ideas come to the forefront, we can entertain them, we can talk about them. We're not perfect. We have a lot that we need to do ourselves, in my opinion, but I think that compared to a lot of places I've worked in the past, this is a great company to be a part of. And for that reason, the legacy and just the advantages that the company provided, it's a very hard sell for me to go find something else that would match that.
I understand. Let's stay on culture for a minute, because that's, I think you're keying in on something very important. As you say, in some places, you can walk in and you can feel the vibe. Is this a good culture? Is this not? It would sound that Mid-York has a great culture. What do you think it is that maybe you're doing, or your father doing, or both of you are doing to facilitate such a great culture?
I would say that one of the great things that we do in our business is that there is a level of ownership that is given to people for their roles that they take on. Mm-hmm. We teach people that this is your part of the business. You own, this is what you are going to have an opportunity to grow into. Here's, if you know this, we will teach you to do this and you can be an expert in that. There's a level of flexibility that's always been given to the plant that has kept them from the kind of supervisory role that usually comes in and just grounds and pounds them and tells them, hey, you need to do this and you need to do that. And it's, again, because we talk to them not as boss and boss employee, we talk to them as not first among equals. This, here's the role I play, here's my challenges, what can you do, what can I do to help you, what do we need to do to make things more effective? And that's my father's leadership style historically. Mm-hmm. Now, there, as far as what we really have going for us that really is important, you can't create this. You almost have to have this come about naturally. Is you need to have people who generally are of goodwill, want to do the best that they can. And if they don't do the best that they can, they're going to feel guilty about it and want to and not sleep well on that. That's so important. There's so many people out there who say it's hard to get people, and it's unbelievably hard to get good people. So the moment you get them, you want to take care of them as best as you can.
Yeah. That's awesome. And that, you say that comes from your father, but it sounds like in many ways you align with that sentiment very much.
I think I believe in it more strongly only because in this day and age with labor where it is, one of the most difficult things to get today are people who care, because you don't have to care anymore. If you look at just the number of job opportunities that come up on a day-to-day basis, I've heard stories for people, they quit their job within 45, 50 minutes, which a process that normally takes days, maybe weeks to get done. Within minutes, these people can find another job and they're hired. Mm-hmm. And it's just because of how hard it is to find labor these days. People on the employer side have to play an extra bit of attention to this now, because if you go out there and you just fire somebody, who's going to replace them? You can't just fire people anymore. There's no real backup to a lot of the people that exist in our world today. We have businesses today that need to run three shifts that can barely do a shift in some parts of our region here. And part of it's because we're in a rural area, but I've got suppliers that tell me this who are right in the heart of some major metropolitan areas. So it's a universal problem across the United States right now. And from what, if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics by 2030, we're in for a critical labor shortage across the entire United States. And that's going to not only affect the way we run, it's going to be an immense challenge for us. The bigger problem is this is going to be a challenge for every single business and every single government agency in the United States. It's not just going to affect the private sector. The public sector is going to be affected by this too.
Absolutely. And I would say it's a problem that I have some hope for what I'll call advanced or specialty manufacturing, which I would put a Mid-York press into that category, where for a number of years, people just weren't going, you know, young people were just not migrating into manufacturing in lieu of, and you know, as an outsider looking in and knowing a lot of companies in the manufacturing realm, I always had to scratch my head. I'm like, you realize you can make double the income if you do that, in some cases more. And it was just, but I think the tide is starting to turn. I don't know if you're seeing that as well, Kyle, in the younger ranks, where at least they're starting to be open to the possibility of going into manufacturing.
I was hoping you'd talk about this because I'm very passionate about this. The one of the biggest problems we have in the United States as a whole is our culture has pushed everybody to go to college. This idea of college for all.
Yeah.
That is a very noble idea, but it is just a noble idea. The fundamental problem with that, just from a taking business out of the equation here, is that 40% of people in the United States can only learn kinetically. That's it. And that's among the entire human population. Not everybody is built for a college education. I was built for a college education. I don't learn kinetically alone. I also learn through visuals, through reading, through lectures, auditorially. So many people in this country can only do it through the old-fashioned monkey see, monkey do style of learning, which means that they're going to struggle in school. They're going to struggle in college. That's not indicative at all of their intelligence. When you start looking at how these people learn and how they can process information, the moment they learn in the kinetic fashion, these people will absolutely blow both of us out of the water. We just couldn't compete with them once they learn in that fashion. And because of that, I feel that a lot of people have been misled that the realm of manufacturing, the realm of the trades are not good opportunities. When in fact, when you look at what they pay, these are the middle-class jobs in the United States that everybody wants. These are the middle-class jobs that everybody has been trying to recapture. And we are in a position today where we can recapture a lot of those jobs, or at least get new variations of those jobs with the coming economics world we're entering into these days. And if we had the system in place today where people could go to trade school, where people could go in and they could actually get an education within 6 months or 2 years, they would be employed right away. Some of them won't even have to wait. They'll be employed the moment they walk into that trade school, because every single employer who depends on those hard skills trained there is just hankering for bodies. So
absolutely,
they're a wide open opportunity.
In some cases, even signing bonuses, if you can believe that.
Oh, I believe it. I've seen it.
Yeah, I think certainly a topic that we're both feeling strongly about. And I even recollect there was a time when, as a parent, kids are grown, they're 20-year-old twins. But when they were little or younger, going into college, I talked to a parent and they'd almost be apologetic about acknowledging that their son or daughter was going into the trades. I'm like, don't apologize. That's smart. If I had to do all over, I'd probably be an electrician, right? You ever know an electrician that need work?
I have an electrician who's my neighbor. He makes more money than I do.
We're in the wrong business, man. But
that's what I said.
So you mentioned your dad a few times, obviously overlapping in the business, and you both navigated working in the business, in business, and then also having a family dynamic. So how do the two of you manage that? So your transition into the business, into a leadership role, how have you navigated that? How do you navigate working day to day with your father being literally in the building?
And that's the key question there, because family dynamics, unlike colleague dynamics with your work colleagues, you work with these people more than you see your family sometimes. The way I navigate that with my father, because this is the age-old question, how does the father's son navigate this relationship? The way we've done it is my father is the CEO of the company. He worries about his responsibilities. He doesn't deal with me directly. He's always given that to his lieutenants to deal with me. So if there was ever a question, they would confront me, not him. And whenever I had something to talk about with family matters, I would talk with him, and we would never talk directly about business unless we needed to talk about business directly. So we rarely, for most of my career, we've been very fortunate that we've never really butted heads. Now we have. It is inevitable that you're eventually going to butt heads with your family if in a family business. It's just the Faustian bargain you sign up for.
Yeah.
You, again, it's just like anything else. You have to work your way through those issues, and you have to remember it. You got to go home, and you're going to have to play the fun role at home when you get home and leave work at work. That can be a challenge in a family business. And it is something that we have, I think, successfully managed to mitigate over the years. Right now, just because of the role we occupy, he is in one building and I am in another building. And that's not because we need separation. It's just because we have our spheres of influence. He has to worry about one part of the business. I have to worry about another part of the business. So in many ways, it helps to have a little bit of a barrier between you so that you don't have the frequent head clashes.
Yeah, that sounds good. And it sounds like you have some, at least the foundational parameters to acknowledge when you're in a family role and when you're in a business role, and knowing, giving some respect to both camps, if you will. I'm understanding it correctly.
That is correct. It's like any successful relationship, whether it's with your father, whether it's your parents in general, your siblings, or your significant others, or anything else. The most important thing that you need to have is a boundary or boundaries. What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? And having that constructed was incredibly important for my success in the business and his success. Mm-hmm. That way, there wasn't anything too blinding that would get in the way of things. Now, did it always work? No, it has not always worked. No. But if it didn't exist in the first place, it would have been very difficult to even tolerate.
Yeah. Yeah. As I reflect on my situation, and boy, do I wish there was a program like this out there when I was first starting up, because I would have learned a lot and probably avoided a lot of pitfalls. But to your point, when my dad and I were overlapping, when we were both going in our own directions, we were fine. It's just when those two roads would merge, it's two rams colliding heads. I was like, boom. Oh.
And even if you do that, the key at the end of the day is that you keep talking and you keep a level head, and you understand that you both want what's best for the business.
Yeah. For us, for when you got two crazy passionate Italians, it's really who has the bigger passion. That's the way I would always look at it. It's like, all right, you're really passionate about this, Dad. All right, you own it. You got it. Go ahead. We'll go in your direction. Or if I really felt strongly about something, I would put a flag in the dirt and say, no, I want to stand fast on this one because I believe in it. And I would yield to him if he really felt strongly about something. I was like, okay, I get it. And that's how we did it. I don't know that it was the most constructive way, Kyle, but it worked for us.
Yep. And I can't, not to put the subject to bed, but that's basically how you navigate any kind of family relationship is you got to understand at the end of the day that you're not the only ones seeing this. This is going to be everybody in the business watching.
Yeah.
You have to be professional. And if you're not being professional, it reflects badly on everybody and the business.
Yeah. And it undoes that quality culture that you've all worked very hard to not only build, but sustain. Good point. So as you get involved in the business and representing the latest generation, how are you thinking about building and evolving the Mid-York Press brand to reflect both honor the history, but also to be contemporary for the next generation of would-be buyers?
And that's always the challenge. How do you keep business this old reinventing itself? One of the things that kept this business relevant, for the business started out in the printing business, and in many ways, it's still pretty much in the printing business. Mm-hmm. It's just evolved from putting ink down on pamphlets and newsback to putting ink down on SPS, CRB, and Mezza board, which is, it's not really that radical of a transition when you start looking at it from the perspective of printing. But with the world transforming the way it is now, with the printing industry now not only dying, but starting to accelerate the process, the only real industry left understanding where printing is going to be a long-term viable solution is in the packaging world. And it's not going to be long. I would imagine that the days of industrial printing, of offset, of rotogravure, and letterpresses letterpresses have already moved into a novelty, but with gravure, offset, flexo, you're starting to see a very serious challenge in the form of digital printing and in the web. I can't begin to emphasize how huge the growth of the web has become, of sustainability practices, just the way the world is transforming overall. There is going to have to be a major shift in every single business in the printing sector. And that's no different with ours. We have to appreciate that fact, and we have been very appreciative of that fact. We got lucky. We got out of the newspaper business completely in 2004, selling off our last division that was producing a weekly penny saver newspaper. And we don't regret it one bit. If you look at the New York Times, if you look at the Washington Post, if you look at the Wall Street Journal, you have to work to find a hardback copy. If you generally read those things today, you're going to read them online and you're going to pay a paywall to go and read them. For us, I think where we need to direct our future energies is further into the packaging side of the business. And that's part of the reason why we acquired Rigid Packaging, because the way the world is moving, we're trying to get away from plastic, and plastic is horrible. Plastic does not degrade. You go into any landfill, and if you go look at how fast plastic degrades, a plastic piece 100 years from now is going to look very similar to a plastic piece today. And if it's hard plastic, it will not deform. Unless you have high temperatures, high enough to melt it, plastic is almost a permanent part of the world. So if you put it in if you put plastic in any trash heap, it's going to be there forever. Whereas paperboard degrades quickly. Within 2 years, it's completely degraded in the environment. And depending on most paperboard in its pure form is 100% biodegradable. The moment it goes into the environment, it's just wood fibers, it's water, depending on what the board is, it's just certain chemicals that help hold it together. Overall, it's way safer for the environment. Paper was back in the 70s and 60s, 70s and 80s, cast out as this unsustainable solution because you're cutting down trees. Turns out you can replant trees. You can't, when it comes to plastic, you have to mine for it every day. You have to drill for it every day in petroleum.
Yep.
Or you can use other oils from plants to produce it. But either way, it's still going to be there for the long term.
Yeah.
Paper regained significance. So for us in the paperboard packaging world, we're still going to see growth. For other industries in the packaging sector, there's certainly going to be a lot of growth as a result of the sustainability practices. And for the betterment of the world overall, we're better off having something with a more circular flow as opposed to something that's basically made as cheap as it can be, because it's easy to find. There's so much of it in the world. And you go out today, you cut down a tree, you're going to put up 1.1 trees if every time one goes down. So there's always going to be a flow of paper coming into our plant some way, shape, or form. It's going to change. It has to change with where the environment is going. But overall, we are going to be way better off as a company moving forward as we fully commit to being a paperboard-driven facility.
Nice. And I think that transformation, I'm seeing two things happen in the greater printing or the traditional printing business. They're either merging, going out of business, or they're transforming, as you have done, if not into more packaging formats, into other formats such as labels or some other specialty printing, where there is a runway of a future, whereas being a traditional offset printer is they're out there and there's still a need for that. But you've seen it probably closer than most as to where the industry's gone and is going. And it sounds
and the industry overall is going to continue to shrink. But I don't think printing is going to completely go away. It's been around for almost 700 years.
Yeah.
It has been an incredible solution to so many. It has revolutionized our life in just about every way, shape, and form. The one thing that is going to change is commercial printing, which used to be needed for everything. With the internet, with everything coming into play as a result of that, it is going to push printing to something that's going to be more about interaction more than just spreading information at the lowest possible cost. It's going to be driven more by the value added side of our industry, as opposed to the just, I'm a printer, here's ink, let me put it on paper. It's not going to be the way the world works anymore.
Well said. And I think you're right. There will be a place for it because it's hard to kill an industry, especially one, to your point, that's been around with a legacy of 700 years. And everyone said that the onset of commercialization of the internet would totally decimate printing, but yeah, I still see it around. So it's
forced it to evolve, which industry is populated by a lot of people who get into it because it's an industry that historically doesn't evolve.
Yeah.
Now it has. And that's not just true for our industry. That is now true for almost every industry that you go into around the world and around the United States, around North America, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. You can't go anywhere without seeing an industry that's being touched by our world today.
For sure. So clearly you have a passion for sustainability as well as innovation and definitely a progressive mindset as it relates to your industry. So that in mind, are you seeing opportunities to integrate in your business, either AI or automation or other smart tools into your processes to drive the business forward?
In short, everywhere. Everywhere. There is no shortage of potential that AI brings to the entire realm of our business, from running our machines to the handwork that has to be done by some of our projects, to just our day-to-day clerical work, how we sell, how we market, how we collect information. Almost every part of our business is completely open to some type of automation as a result of artificial intelligence. The one thing that has started to bother people is just how powerful artificial intelligence is. It's so powerful that we could probably eliminate entire positions that people never thought previously could be eliminated. Now, are we going to do that? No, I think the fundamental thing that's going to change, again, because of the people situation we have, is how our business runs is going to, in the next 5 or 10 years, is going to look nothing like the way our business runs presently. It's going to look different in the shop. It's going to look different in the office. It's going to look different in the sales and marketing offices. It's going to look different in accounts receivable payables. Not one part of the business is going to be untouched by it, including management. And even the way we manage our business is going to be completely different. And we're not even scratching the surface of what this thing can do yet. Just as a quick example, we're going to eliminate any job that requires manual handwork. Any job requiring that is going to disappear, either through the machines that come out as a result of artificial intelligence, or the just the way we manage our business from a ERP standpoint. Mm-hmm. AI is driving everything. And if the way I look at it today, people who are terrified of it have every reason to have concerns with it. However, there's so much upside to what it will bring to everybody in our day-to-day lives. We have to take it the same way that everything comes to us. There's a lot of good that's going to come out of this. And there's a lot of terrifying things that come out of this. First of all, it's artificial intelligence. This is the first time we've actually created something that is going to rival human beings in very terrifying metrics. But it's like anything else. We don't know. It's just the great unknown. What does it do? What can it do? We don't know its limitations yet. We know that there will be limitations, but what are they?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as it relates to, because in our business, in our industry, we've gotten quite immersed in AI. And I think in some industries, at least in the, I'll say the greater marketing services industry, there's a tendency to swing the pendulum way too far. So whatever the next new thing is, way out ahead and way out on the edge. And then there's a pullback way to the other way, right? So I'm basically saying, I think the middle ground is where it's going to be, where it's going to be what I'll call hybrid, where there's going to be certain functions that AI will do and certain functions that humans will need to maybe not do, but oversee. Because where AI is a little lacking is sometimes in judgment or what's right and wrong or what's the best path forward of different options. There's a lot that it can do, but there's some things that it yet can't do, at least from my experience, very well. And everybody says, it's coming. Okay, great. When it comes, we'll assess it. Until then, I think there's really a hybrid is the logical way forward in my humble perspective. And I don't know how you see it.
I'm happy to share that perspective. I use ChatGPT for some of my things that I use in my day-to-day life now. I never thought I would do it. I was like a lot of people who did not want to accept that ChatGPT could do the job that it did. But it has definitely made some aspects of my job a little bit easier overall. Mm-hmm. It's like anything. If you don't pay attention to what it puts out there, you're going to see a lot of stuff that artificial intelligence comes up with. And I'm not picking out ChatGPT in particular when I say this. But all AI has the same problem. It has a tendency to try to fill in the gaps based off of what the community has taught it. Mm-hmm. And not everybody in the community is exposed to the same exposures that everybody else is. So AI tries to come to a conclusion on stuff. And at this point, it will probably be fixed in some way. They're going to try to make it a little bit more, I wouldn't say opinionated, but something somewhat more willing to be challenging, but open as a concept. Yeah. And that's really going to change everything if they can make that happen. But at this point in time, we've yet to see what it can truly do. And once it's unleashed, we're going to be living in a completely different world. One can hope a better world, but it's going to be a better world or a somewhat worse world with the new challenges that none of us are prepared for at this point.
Yeah. True. Looking at the here and now, things going on at Mid York Press or things going on in the industry, what's something that's really exciting you right now? Whether it be in your business or in the industry or what's coming, AI aside, something else that's going on that you're like, wow, I'm really excited about this.
Alluding back to what I was saying earlier, the push for sustainability has done wonders for the folding carton market. It is starting to bring back business that was lost to plastic years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And for everybody who had migrated away from paperboard previously, they're now coming back to it. That in and of itself is very exciting. But the more exciting thing I think for us is not a trend that's going on in our industry, but a trend that's going on around the world where people are now looking to diversify their supply chains. People are looking to bring work back home to the United States because there is now a new anxiety with everything made in Asia in particular. People want stuff made in the United States. People want stuff made here so that they don't have to worry about supply chain problems. Without going too deep into it, the policies that the United States is implementing are certainly having an effect on people looking to turn work back to the United States. A lot of people don't want to talk about it because it seems to be an up and down thing with what the policy will be in terms of duties at the ports each and every mm-hmm. day. Yes. But that's definitely helping not just our industry, but every industry in the manufacturing side of the country and the North American continent overall as well. But overall, as far as printing goes, I think digital is beginning to take its quantum leap forward.
Yes.
And one of the things that's going to help us navigate the problems that we see on a day-to-day basis with getting trained operators and people into the business is having solutions where you don't necessarily need to be high skilled, but you need to be willing to show up and do your job. And digital will be able to provide that for a lot of people. It'll be able to provide that for everybody to an extent to bridge that gap, because you're starting to see digital match, not just in terms of quality, but in terms of productivity to what Offset is doing. It isn't where it needs to be, but I would state that within a few years, where digital will end up being as a technology will be, could be, I should state quite clearly, could be incredible. Mm-hmm. There are some concerns that I personally harbor that might upend all of that. One of them is just the way digital, the digital side of the business traditionally has performed overall.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I would echo that sentiment that we've only seen that technology advance, get better and better, to the point that maybe you could, but if you were to show me a digital print, something printed digital versus something more traditional, I don't know that I could always see the difference.
You can't. The only way you would be able to tell the difference is if you actually had a densitometer or a spectral, and you could see how it was put together. If it was just a typical four-color process job that every print shop puts through, it can be indistinguishable entirely simply because the process is exactly the same. It's just a different means of putting down ink.
Yeah, true, true. So as you look to the future, and this might be a bit of a dovetail into that point, where do you see Mid-York Press in the next 5 years? Will you be further along in terms of, or I don't know if you have digital capability now or?
We do.
Okay. So do you see that potential? You said you have some misgivings, but do you see that evolution continuing in terms of where the business is going, or how do you look to the future?
Oh, I would say right now, digital will be playing a bigger and bigger role in what we do on a day-to-day basis, more and more. Okay. The one thing that keeps it at bay right now is just the current structure of the workload that the business produces, for the time being, still works better on offset, more or less. But we have seen digital grow tremendously over the years. We got into it in 2010 as a packaging company. And when we first got into it, nobody in the digital side of the world had ever really worked with too many packaging companies. We were one of the big guinea pigs for a couple of companies who wanted to get started with the packaging side. And packaging overall was just a hard move, then. It's still somewhat of a hard move now for a packaging user to switch over to, simply because it's not fast, and not as fast as offset. The repeatable processes that have been mastered in offset over the course of hundreds of years are just a couple of decades old with digital, but they have moved very quickly. And there's still it still matters how it looks when it comes off a press. If it color didn't have to match, digital would probably dominate so much of our workload right now. But it does not, because repeatability is incredibly important for people who want particular PMS colors. Digital, simply put, is there in terms of color quality and consistency for premium short run work. It is very good as a solution. I'm not quite sure why other printers struggle to do that, but they do. When it comes to just the overall future for digital, it's inevitable. I would say it's inevitable that it will take over, but there's a lot of things that will that have stymied it over the years and will continue to stymie it if it continues to be, its business model continues to be that of digital and not that of most other machine style equipment sold to our industry or any other manufacturing industry.
Awesome. Awesome. Two more questions. One being, and thank you so much for sharing your journey so far, more yet to come in your journey. But if you were to give someone advice, one of our listeners who might be in their 20s or maybe early 30s, and they're maybe considering venturing into their family's business, thinking about your journey, what might be a piece of advice you'd give them in making that decision? Do I join the family business? Do I go my own way? What do I do? How would you guide them?
What I would say, first of all, is do you love it? If you love the business, then you definitely should seriously look into doing it because it's right there. Your family has a business that you love and you enjoy doing. You've won the lottery. You have won the lottery. But having won the lottery, now know that just like someone else winning the lottery, you got to find a way to take the money without everybody else finding out that you've won the lottery. And you got to be able to convince yourself that this is going to be your enterprise. If you have any plans on taking over, it's going to be your enterprise. It's not going to be here just because it's your family business and your father built it and your grandfather built it. It can go tomorrow. It can all fall apart tomorrow and you can be left with no business whatsoever. You have to love it. You have to know it, learn it. You have to understand the dynamics that go along with it. And more importantly, if it's not going to be it is not going to be a backup. This is not a backup career. If you're going to actually buy into it and you're actually going to do it, don't leave, go to a different industry, and then come back 10 years later and plan on taking over the business. You'll have outside perspective, yes, but you are going to be an alien in the business and you're going to have to rebuild yourself and reintegrate yourself into the business and not be stuck with the burden of having a business that's tiny, that you can easily fold and get away from, or like me, have a business that if it folds, there's going to be a lot of things that have to happen before you can actually get out of it. So there's a lot of things that I would say to someone who wants to get into their family business. But the most important thing is you got to love it. And number two, you got to own it, because it's not going to be your family business. It's going to be your business.
Nice. And finally, if one of our listeners wanted to learn more about Mid-York Press or connect with you directly, what's the best way for them to do so?
So the best way to connect with them directly would be to reach out to, would be to go to our website, which would be midyorkpress.com. We'll be launching a new website soon. Hopefully it'll be up within a couple of weeks of this episode being aired. As far as the contacting me or contacting the company right now, they can contact us on LinkedIn. They can contact us, me personally on LinkedIn, and I'd be happy to get back to them.
Awesome. Kyle, thank you so much for sharing your journey and the next chapter in Mid-York Press, which is very exciting. Again, we've been speaking with Kyle Tenney, Executive Vice President of Mid-York Press, a seventh generation company helping regulated industries deliver quality through precision packaging. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks again, Kyle.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.